Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Monday, April 10th. So if you started your weekend thinking the big stories of last week were the indictment of Donald Trump, the Supreme Court election in Wisconsin, and the expulsion of the two black lawmakers from the Tennessee legislature, and hey, it's Good Friday, Easter weekend, everybody's off except the essential service workers and the priests, what else could happen? If that was your very reasonable thought process, late Friday afternoon, early Friday evening, well, you were wrong. As most of you have surely heard by now, a Trump-appointed judge in Amarillo, Texas, then issued a ruling that would ban the abortion pill, mifepristone, for all women, even in states like New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, where abortion is legal. And then an Obama-appointed judge in Washington state issued a ruling that same night that contradicted the Texas ruling for 17 states. Connecticut is one of those a little bit more protected states now, but New York and New Jersey are not. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, a member of the Judiciary Committee, was on Morning Edition today referring to the Texas judge.
He did a really weird thing. There's a six-year statute of limitations that covers when you can start appealing these things after they've been decided. This just hasn't been used in a way that he's used it before. So, and even his own, the lawyers challenging it, noted that they hadn't seen anything like this before. So in the Fifth Circuit, which is, yes, conservative, you could see them using something like that as a reason to at least stay this beyond the week so it doesn't take effect, or in fact, ruling the other way. And then the Supreme Court, same thing.
Supreme Court, same thing. Keep that in mind. It may become relevant in a matter of days. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. So, abortion rights even more on the brink, the Tennessee expulsions, Trump's incitement after indictment. Who are you going to call? Better call Ms. Stahl. With us now, Ellie Ms. Stahl, The Nation magazine's justice correspondent, and he writes their column called Objection. He was the legal editor for season one of More Perfect, Radiolab series about the Supreme Court, some of you will remember, and he's the author of the book Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution, which is currently a finalist for this year's American Bar Association Silver Gavel Award. Ellie recently tweeted his thanks to all the incredibly bad Supreme Court decisions that made his book possible. Ellie, thanks for coming on. As always, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Hi, happy holy days. I was like the listener that you're talking about, man. I was well into my fish sticks on Good Friday when the Texas news dropped.
And your article on this in The Nation is called A Zealot Judge Has Ordered a Nationwide Abortion Pill Ban. And to be blunt, as you were well into your fish sticks, you speculate that the fact of this ruling coming on Good Friday was not a coincidence. Take us there.
Yeah, because the judge in Texas, Matthew Casermark, is a religious wingnut. He was elevated to the Supreme Court by Donald Trump in part because of his religious zealotry against abortion. He had been a longtime anti-abortion, anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ lawyer who worked for Christian-aligned causes to try to enforce a certain level of bigotry towards the LGBTQ community and also against abortion rights. That's why he was put on the bench. And then when you read his decision in this abortion case, what you see is a bunch of, it's going to sound like I'm being hyperbolic, and I'm not, but what you see is wackadoodle, fake science and Christian theology laced through his decision, just in the question of how these people get to court in the first place, right? Like you had Klobuchar on talking about how this is, technically should be violative of the statute of limitations. Man, there's no good legal argument for why a group, a kind of conglomeration of Christian interest, has a right to sue the FDA at all.
Let me follow up on where you were just going, because I think you were pointing out, I read your article, that the judge's ruling that says women harmed by mifepristone might be too traumatized by their abortions to bring the suits themselves. Therefore, it doesn't matter if women aren't filing this suit, but rather an anti-abortion activist group is. I mean, how sexist and patronizing is that is the question I really want to ask. But the question I have to ask is, what's the legal basis of that idea?
It's bunk. It is wackadoodle. Look, most people can understand that you can only sue when you have been harmed, right? That's like a basic law 101 principle. You can only sue the government if the government has done something to you, right? So if you're going to argue that the abortion pill is somehow illegal or unconstitutional or whatever, obviously you would want somebody who claims to be harmed by the abortion pill. They didn't have that. All right. They didn't have people who had medically induced abortions willing to challenge the FDA on this. So this kind of fake Christian group, this fake doctor group, they call themselves the Americans for Hippocratic Medicine. It's just a front organization for a lot of the kind of Christian conservative causes that we've seen running around our legal system before. They sued on behalf of women who were harmed, which they couldn't find any, by the abortion pill. And the judge allowed them to sue, yes, Brian, on this theory that women who actually got chemically induced abortions might be too traumatized, ashamed, or regretful to effectively sue the government. That was their legal argument to give this group standing. And, you know, when you say, you know, is there precedent for this? This is not something that happens. This is not a normal thing that happens, nor, and again, you already had Klobuchar on, nor is suing the FDA. Remember, folks, the abortion drug that we're talking about, mifepristone, this was approved in 2000. This is a 23-year-old FDA approval of medicine that they're challenging two decades later. There's no precedent for that. And there's relatively no precedent for any judge anywhere overturning the scientific decision made by experts at the Food and Drug Administration about whether or not something is safe. I mean, you can imagine some other judge in Texas ruling that, you know, kale can't be sold in stores because we don't like the seaweed. Like, what? That wouldn't be a thing. But it is a thing when they have the opportunity to control the bodies of women and pregnant people.
Gee, I guess, you know, and again, the question I would like to ask is if he can make an argument in an actual court ruling that the women who theoretically could have been harmed by mifepristone were too traumatized to bring a case on their own behalf. Couldn't we make an argument that many conservative evangelical men are too traumatized by seeing women having equal rights in order for the men to be rational under the law? I mean, isn't that an equal and opposite argument that somebody could bring into court?
Can I make the argument that the children are too dead from gun use in this country that they can't bring the suit against the NRA, so I'll do it? Like, why can't I make that argument, right? And of course, the reason why we can't make these arguments is not, it's because conservative judges are the ones in charge, and so they're only going to accept the arguments that promote their pet causes and wackadoodle bigoted theories, and this is one of them, right? So this is, again, there is a reason why conservatives supported Donald Trump. There is a reason why Donald Trump put these judges on the court. He didn't do it for nothing. And these are the outcomes that these judges were designed to make, right? This is why they have their jobs. And Kazimark is just one of the reactionary ones. And remember, he was handpicked by forced birthers to do this work. Texas, as a federal system, has a weird system. And most federal systems, like if you sue in the federal court in New York or even state court in New York, it's a random selection of judges, right? Donald Trump's learning that right now. That kind of get pulled out of a pot. In Texas, you get the federal judge that covers the little district or town where you file the papers as if it's like 1878. So if you file a lawsuit, a federal lawsuit in Amarillo, Texas, you are guaranteed to get Matthew Kazimark, right? Which is why they filed it there.
Well,
again, so it's judge shopping at a very, it's not even sophisticated, but just at a very bold level. They filed it in Amarillo so they could get the judge who would accept their crazy arguments and then do the thing.
But one could say we have Trump appointed versus Obama appointed judges making opposite rulings. We haven't even talked about the one that came later Friday night in Washington State, protecting the rights to mifepristone in 17 states. Is it different interpretations of federal law, or just that one supports abortion rights and the other doesn't, which, you know, could contribute to people's disillusionment with the courts as just another arm of partisan politics rather than something that's supposed to be outside of that realm?
I mean, I guess I disagree with the premise of your question, because what Kazimierz did was not an interpretation of federal law, right? Like, it's not a valid interpretation of federal law. This is not a situation where, like, you know, two reasonable people coming from opposite sides of the political spectrum may disagree on the finer points of corporate finance. Like, no. This is, are women capable of suing for themselves? Yes, no. And this dude said no. Can you sue the FDA 20 years after a drug? And this dude said yes. That's not an interpretation. That is an outcome that this man wanted. In terms of what happened in other courts, in terms of what happened in Washington, this is an attempt, I think, by the Washington federal courts to make a directly contradictory ruling. Why? To force the Supreme Court to intervene. Now, this is where it starts to get a little bit legal technical, so I'm going to try to keep people out of the weeds. But basically, we have a system where lower court federal judges do have the power to issue nationwide injunctions. And if you don't like that, remember, that's one of the reasons why there's no wall. Okay, this happened to Trump. It happens to Biden. This is the system, right? Wackadoodle rulings are supposed to be kind of quickly appealed to the Supreme Court on there. And we've talked about this before, Brian, the shadow docket. The emergency appeals process is there for basically death penalty cases and situations when a lower court judge has made an egregious error. But this is what the Supreme Court does. If the lower court judge is a liberal, or, you know, appointed by Obama or whatever, and makes a ruling against a conservative cause, the Supreme Court will fast track that on the shadow docket and strike it down, you know, within a couple of days until there is a full hearing on the merits. If this decision is made by a conservative judge against liberal interests or to promote conservative causes, the Supreme Court might well get around to hearing that case, but years later, because they will not take it on their emergency shadow docket. They will slow walk it so that the awful opinion lasts for, you know, a period of time. That's what we saw in Texas with SB8, right? The Texas bounty hunting law. That was a horrible decision. Supreme Court should have overturned that immediately. Instead, they slow walked it so it was relevant until the Supreme Court could get around to revoking abortion rights outright in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, right? The point of the Washington decision is to create an immediate what's called circuit split, right? So now you literally have two different laws, not depending on where you live, but depending on who you listen to, right? That's an intolerable legal situation. And the thought is that this will force the Supreme Court to make a ruling on Kazimierz's abortion pill decision right now. You know, they can't slow walk it. They're going to have to get in the game, you know, this week, next week, to give just some clarity to what the law is.
Rosa in Perth Amboy, you're on WNYC with Ellie Mistal, justice correspondent for The Nation. Hi, Rosa.
Hi. Big fan of your show. I just have to say before I ask my question that I absolutely love, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the speaker's name. I love your energy. I love how enraged you are, because I am, and I have no way of showing it. And I'm just glad that you're on the radio talking about this as passionately as you are.
His name is Ellie Mistal, Mystal. He's justice correspondent for The Nation. And for anybody who's interested, he's the author of the book, Allow Me to Retort, which is up for a silver, whatever they call it, award from the American Bar Association. Rosa, go ahead.
So my question is, should everything go wrong? The worst, I guess. How how long would it take for Mr. Pristone to be illegal from, I guess, like, if there was a ruling on it, making it illegal to it being completely off the streets, or out of pharmacies, rather?
Hi, Rosa. Good question. I don't know. What I can tell you is that as of now, Kazermak stayed his own ruling for 7 days, basically to give people an opportunity to appeal. The Department of Justice, on behalf of the FDA, has already appealed to the Fifth Circuit. Unfortunately, the Fifth Circuit is ridiculously conservative. It's the most conservative appellate court in the country. I don't think there's going to be a lot of success there. If the FDA loses at the Fifth Circuit, then they will appeal to the Supreme Court. Then we're in that kind of shadow docket emergency appeal situation where the court will have an option to either take the case in a quick emergency fashion or slow walk it for a year or two, I believe, based on the Washington decision, that they will take it quickly. And then we will see what the Supreme Court does. If they rule against the abortion pill, that's when we get into really these questions of, should the FDA follow? Will pharmacies follow? Will doctors follow? I think, you know, it's very likely that if they lose at the Supreme Court, either quickly or after a long time, you will see most, put like this, you'll certainly see the manufacturer of the drug, you know, kind of pull back because they don't want to get sued. I think you'll see most doctors stop prescribing it, and you'll certainly see most pharmacies stop carrying it. So I don't know when all of that happens, but, you know, it will start the process of taking this away for sure if the Supreme Court rules against them. But as Brian kind of, you know, signposted in his open, we don't know that the Supreme Court is going to go for this. Again, I keep emphasizing how just ridiculous this man's ruling is. And while, yes, conservatives make ridiculous ruling, religious wingnut conservatives make particularly ridiculous rulings, all of those people are on the Fifth Circuit, there's not going to be a whole lot of relief there. And we know we have certain people of that persuasion on the Supreme Court who also have put their religion ahead of the law in the past. Justices like Sam Alito, the author of Dobbs v. Whole Woman's Health, right? Clarence Thomas, you know, bought or not, Clarence Thomas also agrees with the kinds of wackadoodle theories that Kazermak does. But I just counted to two, and to win, you got to count to five. I do not think that this kind of ruling is something that John Roberts will go for. And look, I am no fan of John Roberts. I don't think that he is moderate in any way. But, you know, the difference between John Roberts and the other conservatives is that John Roberts wants to bend the law to Republican principles as far as he can without breaking it. The other conservatives don't care about breaking it. But John Roberts does care about breaking it, and this is the kind of decision that breaks the law, that breaks down kind of normal legal processes, and including issues of standing, including issues of jurisdiction that we've already talked about. So I don't think that Roberts goes for it. So that's four, you know, it's three liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. That's three. Roberts, that's four. And then I just got to get one more, right? Can I get Kavanaugh, who likes to think of himself as more moderate on some of these issues? Can I get Gorsuch, who is, you know, Gorsuch is not as against abortion as some of his other Christian conservative colleagues. He doesn't like the government and doesn't think that the administrative state deserves to exist, which is problematic on its own accord. But I don't know if he has that kind of crusader fire in the belly to do this, like, you know, like a Sam Alito. So Roberts might be gettable there. I don't think Barrett's gettable, but some of the people that I talk to think Barrett's gettable. So, you know, you only need to get one more of the, you know, one of Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Barrett to join Roberts and the liberals, and I think the Supreme Court doesn't go for this particular version of the abortion pill, nationwide abortion pill ban. So I do think there's hope. I just don't know, you know, to Rosa's question, the timeline on that hope, it eludes me.
Rosa, thank you for your call. And when you talk about the administrative state and somebody like Gorsuch, was it Gorsuch or Kavanaugh? I forget. Not even believing the administrative state should exist.
Yeah, that's Neil.
here's another Amy Klobuchar clip from Morning Edition today, because she points out it's not just the FDA's opinion that mifepristone is safe in addition to be legal, to being legal. Listen.
I look at the fact that the American Medical Association, which isn't like a radical group, they actually said immediately in a very strong statement, there is no evidence that people are harmed by having access to this safe and effective medication. We have got decades of proof to support that statement.
Senator Klobuchar on Morning Edition. So doesn't the judge, or wouldn't the Supreme Court, need to look at the premise that there is actual harm being done to women using the drug over the 20-year legal existence of this drug in the United States, maybe even compare it to the harms physically to women, the risks to women, according to the record of pregnancy and childbirth compared to mifepristone, especially pregnancy and childbirth that would be forced upon them by the state. But at least the AMA and other medical experts' assessment that in the real world, even if the FDA did violate some kind of procedural loophole, something in the year 2000, that the real world shows that this is actually safe.
You don't even have to go to childbirth, right? Mifepristone is more safe than Viagra, right? The drug that can be used to end an unwanted pregnancy is more safe than the drug that can be used to cause an unwanted pregnancy. And I would like somebody to note that.
How? But I saw that in your article, too, in The Nation. But what are you comparing there, actually?
There were statistics that I just pulled from Google, from a CNN article, I think, saying that, X amount, it's like five people out of X will die from mifepristone, and eight will die from Viagra X. Again, both drugs are extremely safe. But here's my problem: Clarence Thomas, in his most recent opinion on liberalizing gun laws in New York State Rifle Association v. Bruin, he wrote that judges should not, and I repeat, should not look at statistics and data while making their decisions, because they should just be governed by the law, not the actual facts on the ground. He is literally in a see no evil, hear no evil mind space when it comes to rulings. And I know there are at least three or four judges on the Supreme Court that agree with him, right? So the objective fact that mifepristone is safe might not matter to a number of justices on the Supreme Court. Moreover, let's go back again to Kazermak's decision. Where did he find that mifepristone was unsafe, right? Because again, all of the real medical evidence says that it's, that it's entirely safe. And as you point out, Brian, not just here, but globally, mifepristone has been legalized around the world and been shown to be safe. Kazermak said, and again, can't make this level of paternalism and sexism up, Kazermak said that mifepristone, the FDA did not fully consider the psychological effects of having a successful abortion on the women and pregnant people who take the drug, right?
It might be relief in a lot of their cases.
Where are your stats? How do you find the data on whether or not a person who terminated their pregnancy is sad or regrets it? There is no data, in part because many of them don't. But you see my problem, right? Like their argument is so nebulous that it's actually difficult to hit it with facts, because it's not fact based. It's vibes based, right? It's
theocracy.
Christian conservative outcome based. It's not grounded in science or data or facts.
Ellie Mistal, I know a lot of our listeners appreciate your Harvard Law School educated brain and all the analysis this morning, but also the catharsis you provided to many. Thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a nice one.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.